This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Wong Xiaoning joining us remotely. Now, it is 7.07 in the morning, Friday the 20th of November, and in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking with Dr. Rashid Mustafa Sarwar, representative for UNICEF in Malaysia, on COVID-19's impact on children in conjunction with Universal Children's Day today. But before that, as always, we're taking a look at the markets. Roshan, how did it look last night?
Well, Asian markets closed primarily, or at least the ones we're taking a look at right now, primarily in the red. Japan was down 0.4%, Hong Kong was down 0.7%, Singapore was down 0.4%, and the FBM KLCI took the cake, down 1.3% yesterday. The only market here that I have in the green in terms of the ones that we take a look at was Shanghai, which was up 0.5%.
And in terms of the US markets, they were all in the green as well. The Dow Jones was up 0.2%, the S&P 500 up 0.4%, and the Nasdaq closed 0.9% higher. So for some insights into global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, equity markets seem to be caught in between vaccine-related optimism and pessimism over a resurgence in the virus. Which direction are you expecting it to go into?
Well, I think looking at the greener pastures ahead, and I think that although right now things are looking dire, this vaccine has given a lot of hope, and that next year is going to be, they're looking forward to next year as things begin to perhaps finally normalize.
And, you know, the prospect of further U.S. lockdowns and restrictions have seemed to shift investors back to stay-at-home stocks, with technology the winner overnight. Is this a trade that we should consider even more for the longer term, even though we did see some recovery in the more retail-centric stocks?
Yeah, I think that the tech sector right now, and I've said this, as you know, before, but I think at this point it's very, I think your risk-reward here doesn't favor owning them. I think this rotation, the train has left, and I think it's going to have a lot more to go, but it won't be a straight line because you're not going to have cyclical momentum like you had tech momentum. But these price to sales ratios are outrageous. And I think that what's going to expose the overvaluation, in my view, in the tech sector is going to be a higher bond yields.
Tim, are there any particular sectors or any subsectors in the tech sector? There's a lot of use of sector there, but that look particularly expensive to you?
Yeah, I think these e-commerce companies, you know, like these Shopify's, I mean, what's it trade at? 100 sometimes sales? You have
something around there.
Apple trades at 7x revenue. And their revenue has been going down, actually, you know, increasing at a decreasing rate, I should say. So I think when you look at these revenues, you know, of course, the inverted to interest rates, they look cheap. That's why I think the present value calculation that you can do with rising yields is going to expose that. However, I just think any way you slice it, and it's way too crowded for me.
And Tim, the Bloomberg Dollar Spot Index is trading near its lowest since April of 2018. Is the Fed concerned, do you think, about the greenback's weakness, or is this ultimately good for the U.S. economy in the long haul?
Yeah, I think the Fed actually would like a little weaker dollar. And in fact, it is good for the I do believe the dollar actually is in a downtrend now. And that's going to be the story we'll be talking about, in my view, throughout next year. I think the Fed welcomes it and certainly helps cyclicals and certainly helps some of these multinationals that, you know, have been lagging. And incidentally, over, you know, a good majority, and my number could be wrong slightly, but 470 of the 500 stocks in the S&P 500 are flat over 3 years. So this is a very narrow rally, which to me exposes a lot of risk.
Speaking of numbers, Tim, let's take a look at the U.S. jobless numbers that came overnight, I think. Two things. What did you make of the numbers? And do you think this will have any bearing on the stimulus package?
Yeah, I think the numbers, you know, obviously there's still, we have a lot of give back to get. But I look even just from anecdotally around here, looking at restaurants, that this will be a knockout blow to them right now if this continues. And I think so you're seeing a lot of people in a service sector that can't work from home, and there's quite a few, I think, that they're left behind. So a stimulus package, to me, I think will target some of those sectors. And I also believe we're going to see an infrastructure bill. I think it's about the only thing they can agree on in Washington, finally. So I do think we're going to see an infrastructure bill next year. And that, to me, makes me love the materials, which has actually been performing pretty well. So that's not any new insight. But I'm still holding on to the valuation attractiveness of financials.
And Tim, the IMF has also warned that there is a disconnect between financial asset prices and the real economy, threatening financial stability. Is this a concern that you share?
Yeah, I think it's a very big, and I think that's what the moral hazard over the years has been with the Fed, with what they've done, because the Fed can't really control hiring, but they can control, as we've seen, asset prices and the pricing of it through these lower interest rates, which is why I think higher rates will expose some of this stuff. But nevertheless, I think it does cause this inequality that's much talked about. And I think it's because those that own assets are very happy, and those that don't, you know, are left behind, and their real wages have actually been stagnant to even declining over the last 20 years. So that is a problem, and I think that's the real issue. So this can't, in my view, you need some real economic growth. You don't need the financial asset inflation.
Tim, to wrap up, speaking about financial assets, I want to get your thoughts on Tesla being included in the S&P 500. This is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, company to be introduced into the index in a while. I think the last one was Berkshire Hathaway when it was worth around $190 billion. Tesla is worth $420 billion. How do you think it's going to work? How do you think this is going to work out? And do you have any concerns?
Well, at least they started making money. But and a phenomenal speculative story for sure. And I, you know, again, I, as large as it is, it might be the largest company that makes the fewest amount of smallest amount of money in the index. But, you know, to me, I think it's one of those stocks that is, you know, it's speculative. And I think to me, it's just not one that I'm more of a value type guy. And that doesn't really, you know, it doesn't get me excited too much. But nevertheless, what Elon Musk has done with that company and the trend that's been set, I think there's going to be more companies that are coming in, Chinese companies, by the way, I think are going to come in and I think compete in that market share. But, you know, it's overdue and we'll see. But very pricey and they make a little bit of money.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Tim. That was Tim Mulholland, president of TJM Limited based in Chicago. Oh, the opinion that Tesla's a bit of a speculative play, understandably, considering how little money they make for how big of a company they are. Shanning, what were your thoughts there on Tim's comments?
I share something in common with him. He likes value too. Don't get caught up in the hype. But he has some really valid points there. One of which is that if you look at the financial asset prices versus the real economy, there is a growing spread. And that, I think, is something all governments, not just the US government, probably will have to address in the longer term. Because if the real economy doesn't recover, eventually financial assets will hit a ceiling. So that's the big question I have. And I don't know how the Feds are actually going to address this, because ultimately the amount of QE that's in the system, the amount of liquidity in the system is just incredible. How do you unwind this?
Yeah, and he seems quite more optimistic around the rotation plays, right? He says the train has left. He seemed a bit generally skeptical over the tech side. Just, and not a matter of whether they're good businesses or not. It's a purely valuation-centric issue, right? And I think Shopify is, valid concern, I think. But he brought up Apple, which is 7x sales, which is interesting because I can't remember the last time someone brought up Apple as yes, the PE is in the mid-30s at this point, but I did not realize that their price to sales was 7x, which is an interesting metric to pay attention to.
And of course, he raised the specter of e-commerce companies, which he's of the opinion that they're too a little bit too crowded, a little bit too expensive for him at this point in time. But if we look at the retail sector as well, Macy's has reported earnings, and they saw slowing online sales growth actually in their third quarter results. So that increased worry over its prospects for this crucial holiday season that we're going into. Revenue fell to just under $4 billion from $5.17 billion a year earlier, narrowly beating, nevertheless, analyst expectations of $3.86 billion. Their net loss was $91 million compared with a net income of $2 million a year earlier.
Now, same store sales were down 20%, while analysts had been calling for a 23% decline. And digital sales, however, grew 27%. A bit of optimism there, but those gains weren't enough to offset losses at the store, and also marked a deceleration from the second quarter when e-commerce sales surged more than 50% at the time.
Yeah, despite this, Macy's executives expect robust growth online carrying it through the holiday season. But of course, it's a question of higher shipping costs in the next quarter that may weigh on profitability. But retailers like Macy's, you know, their plan is to show growth in e-commerce this holiday, because many shoppers, I think this is also the case for Malaysia, they plan to stay away from the stores, especially with COVID cases setting new highs in many states. So I think the question is, for many retailers, what kind of omni-channel platform are you going to grow? Because that's all about, you know, know, reaching out to customers in many, many different ways.
Yeah. And then also just for before we move on from this, just two more headlines to pay attention to. Both Philippines and Indonesia have cut interest rates. We spoke to Vishnu Varadhan yesterday at Mizuho Bank. He thought it was a 60% probability that Indonesia would cut their rates. But the Philippines cut in interest rates seems to have surprised economists. So something to pay attention to.
Absolutely. But right now we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Rashid Mustafa Sawar, representative for UNICEF in Malaysia on COVID-19's impact on children. We're also running a poll on the BFM Twitter account at BFM Radio, asking you what will be the biggest impact of the pandemic on this generation of children. Let us know what you think. In the meantime, stay tuned because we'll be coming back in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.